they propped each other up. We should have asked at the time whether the crisis of one would presage the crisis of the other. It has been 9 years now since the onset of the great global financial crisis, and the question is, have we learned anything? There is no great sign of it. In the United States, the banks are bigger than ever. Are they more stable or under better control? There is no persuasive evidence. In Europe, a decade almost of stagnation, hollow promises, political disaffection, and rebellions both on the left and on the right. In China, a property boom and now a bust, an environmental nightmare in the air, the water, and the countryside. Everywhere, the reality of unstable resource prices, the threat of climate disaster, the reality of conflict. To borrow a phrase from Yeats, surely some revelation is at hand. Not, I fear, from the hand of the economists, whose formulas and policies remain always the same. Growth and prosperity are on the horizon, but for now, austerity, cutbacks, privation. And if these policies are found in retrospect to fail, then they have been applied with insufficient zeal. The solution to the failures of reform is always more reform. But when separated from theology and dogma, economics is not, in fact, all that difficult. A proper understanding begins with proper accounting. Resources, the energy on which we all depend, have become not perhaps more scarce, but more expensive, more difficult to obtain. More is required, therefore, to obtain them. The fixed capital, which we have invested in the past and on which our living standards rely, gets old. More is necessary to maintain it. The cost of decarbonization and of mitigating the climate change that is now inevitable must be factored in. Otherwise, that cost will be paid in unimaginable ways by the future generations. Necessarily, therefore, less is available for new investment and for present consumption. This is simple accounting. The amounts are not necessarily large in relation to the total production of which we are capable, but even a few percentage points is enough at the margin with a growing population to make the difference between growth, stagnation, and decline, between a sense of advance and a sense of retreat. So there is a choice. Either better use must be made of what we have, or some must be excluded from having anything at all. Distribution cannot, therefore, be separated from welfare, and the price of ignoring this fact is war. Achieving the first result, that is to say, a better use of what we have, and therefore a tolerable or indeed happy life for most of the people, is a matter largely of design, of proper systems of social insurance, of effective and autonomous regulation, of efficient social provision, of control over predation, force, and fraud, and of scaling back that which is not needed, or actually dangerous. Armaments, banks, coal, but not art, music, science, and culture. And the key to doing this, the key to getting this right, is surely a matter of understanding of ideas. The pragmatist philosophical tradition in my country, which was the inspiration for institutional economics, held that the idea is not and cannot be a commodity. It cannot be traded. It cannot be marketed. It cannot be owned. It is not property, but the product of conversation, of dialogue, something inevitably developed and held in common, res publica, to repeat a phrase. And hence, dear Rector, the importance of the Likhachev Conference, and I have to say once again how proud and happy I am to have been invited to speak here a second time. Большое спасибо.
Следующего докладчика, я бы хотел бы опять обратиться к приветствию. В наш адрес поступило приветствие.